Welcome to the Georgia Today podcast from GPB News. Today is Tuesday, December 24th. I'm Peter Biello. On today's episode, the Atlanta Falcons are helping to grow Georgia high school flag football programs. A food safety specialist from the University of Georgia has some holiday kitchen tips for you, and we'll highlight some of the GPB stories and interviews you might have missed in 2024. We'll hear from the one and only Donny Osmond, perennial pop powerhouse Hanson, and we'll rediscover how a Savannah murder became a musical that's headed for Broadway. These stories and more are coming up on this edition of Georgia Today. The Atlanta Falcons are expanding their efforts to grow flag football across Georgia. Last week, the team announced new grant opportunities to help schools start or sustain girls' flag football programs. Chris Millman, Senior Vice President of Community Engagement, says ultimately the Falcons want a girls' flag football program in all 465 Georgia high schools.
So with this new program, we're going to now give grant money available to any school that, one, wants to start a team. And then we also are going to continue to fund schools, those 275 schools that currently have a team. We're now going to have additional funding, make them feel our love and support here from the Atlanta Falcons for girls' flag football.
The Falcons also announced Georgia high school tackle football programs will have the opportunity to receive up to 50 guardian caps per school in an effort to enhance health and safety at the high school level. As holiday cooking shifts into high gear, one food safety specialist at the University of Georgia wants people to play it safe. GPB's Chase McGee has more on keeping a germ-free kitchen.
Old culinary habits are hard to shake. That's according to Carla Schwan, food safety specialist at UGA's Cooperative Extension. She remembers watching her mom prepare poultry by washing it in the sink.
I'll ask her, you know, why are you rinsing the poultry? And I explain why you should not. And she said, well, but that's how I learned from my mom, you know, from my grandma.
But Schwan says that doing that can create the perfect conditions for harmful bacteria to grow. Instead, thaw your proteins in the fridge and cook your poultry to 165 degrees Fahrenheit. She says that while it's great to socialize over the dining room table, refrigerate leftovers within 2 hours at room temperature.
You want to keep that between 3 and 4 days. And if you think that you're not going to be able to eat that, maybe freezing it, it's a best idea. And you can keep it frozen for about 3-4 months.
Or Schwan says you can always send home an extra plate with whoever's at your table. For GPB News, I'm Chase McGee.
Hanson, the Grammy-winning musical trio of brothers from Tulsa, Oklahoma, came to Atlanta to celebrate the 20th anniversary of their album Underneath with two concerts at the Buckhead Theater. Brothers Taylor and Zach Hanson joined GPB's Christy York Wooten to share their very special connections to Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, we love Atlanta. I mean, it's such a beautiful city, and that was a very fateful night for particularly for Zach and I. Because we both met our, you know, eventual wives at that show. So we both married Atlanta girls. And I mean, the Tabernacle, amazing venue. It was that, and that tour was pivotal. I mean, because we were making a decision, you know, on that whole album to really invest in connecting with fans in a way that, well, frankly, just in a way that rock and roll bands did. Like we came up at a time where the music we made was very much in contrast with what was happening. But we immediately became kind of a category of one on that first record. Here's a band of young guys, very, very young, playing music received by a lot, particularly a lot of young women, very excited to be fans of the band. But then really, we're this very organic band. Like we're a garage band. We're a rock band. We're not a pop band like a lot of the artists that, you know, kind of resonated with a lot of those young girls. And ultimately, it's about music, period. That's it. That's what it's about for us. So on that second album with that tour, it was really a huge part of that ongoing connection with fans, really finding the real fans, finding those real, the ones that would wait in line, the ones that would come time after time. And we'd seen these incredible fans that had gone from being like, oh yeah, I heard that on the radio, and just all of the pandemonium of kind of a breakout hit, to having this really strong connection with an audience and really loving being a band that was, they're known for playing live shows, known for changing it up every night, known for, you know, what covers we might do. And so Tabernacle is the ultimate, you know, rock and roll venue, and great energy there, and amazing, always amazing fans in Atlanta. And I think we felt like we were at a really pivotal point in our career, because it was that season where we were saying, like, these are where the real fans, like, choose us. You know, they go past a hit, they go past even 3 or 4 hits, and they become fan club members, they become people that have their own story. And so Atlanta that night was a fateful night for sure.
Yes, we did both meet our wives at the show at the Tabernacle. So forever we will love that venue, regardless of anything that happens. And you know, it started a real connection to that city, that place. You know, I mean, I spent in summers going to see my wife as she was, at Georgia, downtown, going to college, getting married at Rhodes Hall, so Atlanta's a special place.
That was Taylor and Zach Hansen of the group Hansen speaking with GPB's Christy York Wooten. To hear the entire interview, visit gpb.org. When we're little kids, this time of year can produce precious memories that will last our entire lives. Then we grow up and life gets more complicated. But there's great value in savoring those old memories. Here's Salvation South editor Chuck Reese.
'Tis the season, the holiday season, the time of year when people sing Christmas carols. It occurs to me, however, that Christmas songs are not considered particularly Southern. Let's say you live in Charlotte, North Carolina, and a group of carolers arrives at your doorstep one evening. They will most likely sing Jingle Bells or God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen or Silent Night, just like the carolers in Seattle. But there is, good friends, Southern Christmas music, so I decided to share four of my favorites, songs that are on my holiday playlists every year. Songs that touch all four bases, the funky, the twangy, the bluesy, and the punky. Let's start with the funky. My home state's own James Brown, the godfather of soul, always hits my playlist with this tune from 1968.
Hitch up your reindeer, go straight to the ghetto.
Next, let's step back a few years in Southern Christmas times and roll westward to Texas, where one of my favorite holiday tunes was written and recorded by Mr. Willie Nelson in 1964.
Pretty pencils to write I love you.
Pretty pencils to write I love you. Man, I love that line. Our Tennessean friends are partial to an even older tune released in 1957 by a young man from Memphis named Elvis Presley.
I'll have a blue Christmas.
If someone you love is not with you at Christmas, Blue Christmas is a must listen. And if the person you love best is with you, you should grab that person and dance to Blue Christmas. I mean, just listen to that rhythm. It's absolutely perfect for one of those not quite slow dances where you can hold your partner a little too closely and do some spinning and maybe even a dip at the end. And for our last number today, let's hop forward four decades to the 1990s and back home to Georgia. This tune isn't really a Christmas song. But ever since it came out in 1991, it's been on all of my holiday lists because it just captures so wonderfully how we all want to feel at this time of year.
Shiny, happy people, holy, shiny, happy.
I hope this season brings you at least a few moments where you feel shiny and happy and do your very best, as the song says, to throw your love around. I hope all of you have the happiest of holiday seasons, whatever you celebrate. And we would just love it this season if you dropped by to visit us a time or two at SalvationSouth.com.
Salvation South editor Chuck Reese comments on Southern culture and values weekly on GPB. Plus, Chuck hosts Salvation South Deluxe, a series of extended episodes of the Salvation South podcast that unravel the untold stories of the Southern experience, narrated by the authentic voices that make this region truly unique. Donny Osmond has been performing since he was a small child and achieved worldwide fame in the 1970s, first with his brothers, then with his only sister Marie on their TV variety show. He's performed in Georgia many times over the years and returned to Atlanta for a show at the Cobb Energy Performing Arts Center this past summer. GPB's Christy York Wooten talked to Donny Osmond about some of his Georgia memories.
So we're going off in the audience and massive amounts of screams. Now, what I'm telling you happened in like nanoseconds. All these screams were taking place, and I look out to the audience. Of course, we were in the dark, and I thought somebody was hurt because everybody was screaming. And then I realized right then, a split second, they're screaming for us. I got to do this the rest of my life. This is amazing. And then we went on that big tour where we came to the Municipal Auditorium in Georgia, in Atlanta.
So one of the things I wanted to ask you about is you're known as an entertainer because you do lots of things in addition to singing, but people may not know what a huge audiophile you are and how much you actually love music and listening to music. Yeah. And you're influenced by a lot of things growing up, especially you've talked about Motown, R&B, rock and roll. You and I both love Stevie Wonder and Peter Gabriel and folks like that. But your latest album, Start Again, came out during the pandemic, right? And you've got featuring Charlie Wilson from the Gap Band, right?
Yeah. And from the Gap Band, yeah.
One of the songs, I think, had a writing credit with Ne-Yo as well. So I think a lot of people don't know this about you. So tell us a little bit more about some of the music that you dig.
Well, one of the most important things you can do as an artist is reinvent. When people expect one thing, you gotta turn the other way. Some artists don't do that, and that's fine. Whatever they want to do. With me, I grew up with variety as my middle name. And it was necessary for reinvention because when you hit it so big as a child star, as a teeny bopper, you have to get out of that genre as you grow older. Not that I'm putting it down because it was fantastic. Puppy Love Years, Go Away Little Girl, all those songs, they were fantastic. And the R&B stuff that I did with my brothers, One Bad Apple, things like that. But then you have to progress. So I would listen to Stevie Wonder a lot, Earth, Wind, and Fire. I loved P-Funk, Philadelphia Funk. And of course, back in the early days, my roots was all about singing. I was surrounded by one of the greatest singers of all time, Andy Williams, and listening to his control and the way he approached the song gave me that foundation. Then I went to the Stevie Wonders of the world, and then, which, you know, he doesn't sing correctly, but he sings amazingly. But when you get the training of Andy Williams with the combination of Stevie Wonder, you can still control the sound and still have the soul, the control of Andy Williams and the soul of Stevie Wonder. That was my training.
That makes sense. So let's talk a little bit about some.
Sorry, I broke into some songs there.
That's fine with us. That's fine with us.
But that, yeah, that's what I've been doing for 60 years. So whatever.
There's some Georgia artists we could talk about too. I know you have a couple of Ray Charles stories, but I also want to know if you have any Gladys Knight stories or any stories about any other Georgia artists. I know that Gladys was on the reincarnated Donny and Marie show one time at least.
And oh, no, we're going to do one better than that.
Okay, who we
one
got?
One better than that. No, it's Gladys. But when I was the very first artist to start The Masked Singer, I was at Peacock. And Gladys was on that show with me, but none of us knew who we were competing against. It was all secretive. So it got down to T-Pain, who won, me and Gladys. We were the final three. And obviously Gladys's voice is so unique and it's so recognizable. So we're standing there during a commercial or during a downtime in the wings, and I'm standing next to the Bee, which is Gladys, and she's standing next to the Peacock, which is me. And we're not supposed to talk to each other. And I just said, "Hi, Gladys." And I heard this sweet little laugh. She said, "Hi, Donnie."
She recognized your voice.
She recognized mine. I recognized hers. But I didn't know it was T-Pain. And Gladys came in third. I came in second. And T-Pain won the first one.
What a trio. What a trio.
Yeah.
That was GPB's Christy York Wooten talking with legendary stage and screen performer Donny Osmond. Also this past year, 30 years after hitting bookstores, Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil premiered as a musical. GPB Savannah reporter Benjamin Payne attended opening night in Chicago and had this review.
Outside the Goodman Theater, you see L trains passing overhead and skyscrapers towering from on high. But inside the venue, it's Savannah. Spanish moss dangles from live oak tree branches high above the stage. Gothic statues of angels evoke Savannah's Bonaventure Cemetery. And the soothing buzz of cicadas reverberates throughout the Goodman's 800-plus seat main stage theater. The show opens at Bonaventure with voodoo priestess Minerva chanting somber spells to summon African spirits from the grave. This solemn scene stands in stark contrast to most of the rest of the musical. It turns out this show about a fatal shooting is lighthearted. Above all else, it's a love letter to Savannah. The musical's main focus is not on Jim Williams, the wealthy socialite and antiques dealer who fatally shot his much younger lover, Danny Hansford. Instead, the star of the show is the Lady Chablis, a black transgender nightclub performer played masterfully by J. Harrison G. Last year, G became the first openly non-binary person to win the Tony Award for Best Leading Actor in a Musical. It's easy to see and hear why in their portrayal of Chablis. G looks and sounds almost exactly like the real Lady Chablis, who played herself in the 1997 film adaptation. Author John Barrett, who was friends with Chablis, says the resemblance is uncanny.
So much like Chablis was that it gave me goosebumps. She commanded a room just the way Jay did last night.
Unlike the book and the movie, the musical doesn't feature an author character. Instead, the audience is addressed as the author, giving the cast a clever way to break the fourth wall and play with theatergoers. It's a wise move to leave Barron out, since in the book, he's a largely impartial narrator with little to lose, unlike Jim Williams, who's on trial for murder. Williams is played by Broadway actor Tom Hewitt, who puts on a fun Southern accent without overdoing it. Here he is, scolding his employee, lover, and ultimately shooting victim Danny Hansford, restoring a chandelier.
You put these on the wrong way!
No, I didn't.
The prisms are facing in. They need to face out to reflect the light.
You just tell me now.
You'll have to take each one off and start from scratch.
And staying true to its name, Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil does indeed include a midnight scene, with Minerva helping Williams practice voodoo at a cemetery to help his odds with the jury.
Before midnight comes, it's time for doing good.
What happens after midnight?
Utter things.
Unfortunately, there are no scenes from any of the four murder trials. The mystery of whether Williams killed Hansford out of self-defense or out of cold blood is ignored. The shooting is cleverly hidden from the audience's view by framed paintings in Williams' house, but a courtroom drama never comes. This is the show's biggest weak point. The music and vocal performances, though, are phenomenal. When the production was first under development several years ago, the producer's original plan was to feature only music by Savannah native Johnny Mercer. He's mentioned frequently throughout the book, and his great-grandfather built the Mercer Williams house in which the shooting takes place. Instead, the roughly 20 songs in the musical are all original, written by Tony Award winner Jason Robert Brown. Here's Emma Dawes, a high society rival of Jim Williams. She's played by Sierra Boggess, a Broadway actress who previously performed in The Phantom of the Opera.
Once that monster's put in jail, it's our moment to prevail, to say to the world we banish from this idyllic spot, debauchery, debasement, and moral rot.
Many of the numbers are sung, captivatingly, by J. Harrison G. as the Lady Chablis. Throughout the show, Chablis is told to rein it in, to dial it down, but she proudly defies those edicts. And so, the musical's takeaway message is to stay true to yourself. That might sound trite, but Chablis' experience as a black trans performer in the Deep South 40 years ago is still timely. In Georgia this year, Republicans introduced a bill that would have removed hate crime protections for LGBTQ Georgians. It's just one example of new attempts by state governments to restrict rights for gender nonconforming people. As a non-binary person who grew up in North Carolina, Jay Harrison G says the show has a lot to say about the South.
It says that there's a lot of history there, and it says that there's a lot of opportunity to grow and to expand. And that's what excited me about this story, an opportunity from growing up in the South to show not only the South, but the world that we have a long way to go to be free and to live in joy and safety.
G's performance as the Lady Chablis is worth the price of admission alone. Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil runs through August 11th at Chicago's Goodman Theater. But that may not be your only chance to see the show. Producers are in talks to bring the musical to Broadway and to Savannah. For GPB News, I'm Benjamin Payne in Chicago. I say to my sisters and brothers and others, no matter what
you are. And that's a wrap on this episode of Georgia Today. Thanks so much for tuning in. You can find the latest headlines at gpb.org/news, and you'll find more stories from Georgia on the podcast tomorrow. So subscribe now, and we will pop up in your podcast feed automatically tomorrow afternoon. If you've got feedback, we would love to hear from you. Email georgiatoday@gpb.org. I'm Peter Biello. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.